Thanks, Joe, and thank you all for joining us for this session this afternoon. It's actually quite strange. I'm sure Rebecca experienced this as well. It's quite strange standing here because I should be facing this way, and yet it looks as though the whole room is maybe just inching towards the door in case this turns out to be a dud session. But so please stay. I've got the pleasure of being able to provide a community perspective on the development of the strategies and the content of the strategies, which is a slightly invidious task, not least because my funder, my favourite funder, I might say, is sitting on the podium, but also because the strategies are right at the heart of what we do, but they're fundamentally policy documents. They're not what we do, but they do provide a very important framework and context for everything that happens in the sector. And so I'm very pleased to be able to provide this perspective. I do so in my capacity as CEO of AFAO, the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations. So we're the community peak organisation here in Australia and bring together other peak organisations plus our members at a state and territory level who lead responses on behalf of their communities to HIV. And so the perspective I'm bringing today is very much an AFAO perspective, but it's one informed by a lot of discussion over the last 12 months and 18 months with our community partners, both at the national level and at the state and territory level. So in thinking about the national strategy, there can be a sense of fatigue sometimes when we think about the strategy. They roll around very quickly. We go through intensive consultation processes and engagement processes, and I hear from time to time people say, what's the point? Why would we do this? Does it really matter? This fundamentally is a document. Surely the task for all of us is to be getting on with the implementation, to actually be doing the doing rather than describing the doing. And so there can be a sense of fatigue, and some of the things that people say are, well, we know what to do. You know, we're 35 years into this epidemic. We've got all the science, we've got all the evidence that comes out of a meeting like this. We know where to head. There are no financial commitments made by this strategy. It's not tied directly to funding. If someone doesn't follow the strategy, there's no binding compliance requirements and there's no redress mechanism. So why does this actually matter? What's the point of developing a national strategy? And I want to propose that there's a very good point, or in fact there's quite a few points why a national strategy actually matters and matters a lot to all of us who work in this space. So each strategy, as Rebecca has walked us through, is actually a commitment made not only by the national government but by state and territory governments together with the national government. And it's a reaffirmation of that commitment. Quite an astonishing thing after eight strategies to have something going right back to the 80s when there was a very different epidemic context, to have governments successively sit down on a cyclical basis and say, what is this problem we're trying to grapple with? How does it matter? In what ways will we address it? And how will we do so together? And that's what the strategy does. It provides a reaffirmation of that commitment. And when we might worry that a particular jurisdiction, and I won't name any, but a particular state or a particular territory might start to drift, might start to get some weird ideas, some wacky ideas. The strategy and the process of its development, sorry, Lisa, you're smiling now, and I wasn't looking at WA at any stage there, but it actually holds us together as a country. It holds governments together in terms of a consistent process of dialogue through which the challenges of the epidemic and the responses to the epidemic and the evidence that informs that is prosecuted in order to come to a landing on this is where we will go and we will do so together. Those are fundamentally very, very important things in an area of very sensitive public policy. So it tests and builds a consensus each time we go through the strategy development process. And not only that, but it's a political process. Ministers sign off on strategies, and in the case of this strategy, it's ministers at the federal level sitting jointly with ministers at a state and territory level. That's a very, very important statement of political commitment that protects against the diminution of this as a policy issue by drifting into the bureaucracy and being simply a matter of administrative routine. It re-articulates some very, very important core principles, and Rebecca introduced us to some of those, and none of those principles should be taken for granted. These are unusual principles. These are not necessarily typical of public health. You won't look to many public health strategies, to many government strategies, and see the centrality of affected communities sitting right at the heart of that policy statement. These things matter, and their constant re-articulation matters. It provides for debate and refinement. It allows us to update our thinking. Very, very strong statements in the current strategy about U equals U. It sets directions, and not only that, it actually rejects directions. So it both says, this is where we're heading, and by definition it says, we're not going in these directions over here. Those things are very, very important. It signals the public health priority, the continuing public health priority of HIV as an issue, articulates targets, provides us with a framework for mobilising resources. So this guides government investment, guides government decision making, and it provides the foundation against them which we measure our progress. So if we go back to our original proposition, do we really know what to do? Well, actually we don't always. And the process of strategy development helps us to clarify and to test and to build consensus around those directions. And the risk of creeping divergence is something that's real, and the strategies and their process of development provides a guard against those things. I proposed at the beginning that it makes no financial commitments, but actually that's not quite true either, because investments do tend to follow, however imperfectly. And certainly from a community perspective, we would always say that the investment is less than what is needed. But investments do tend to follow the kind of policy commitments that we see in this strategy. States and territories are held at the table through this process, and that includes states and territories that don't have a state and territory level HIV strategy. So New South Wales and some of the other states and territories, Victoria, there are state-level strategies, but that's not true of all of the states and territories. So the national strategy provides an important framework, not only at the national level, but for also for those states and territories. In terms of compliance requirements, well, actually misalignment with the national strategy invites real political risk, because the strategy articulates something important against which we can test what's actually happening around the country. And it provides a mechanism through which we can be continually testing progress against those targets and reorienting our priority and effort. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what we wanted as communities from the strategy, and this comes from discussions across the national peaks with NAPWA, with AVIL, the peak for drug users, with Scarlet Alliance, the peak for sex workers, and with Inukuna, the peak for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are mobilised around HIV. And these are some of the things that we thought were very important when we were just starting this journey. I won't go through all of them, but from a community perspective, we do want ambition in these strategies. We want to get to the end of this. We want to see an end to HIV transmission, and we want to see excellent, outstanding quality of life for people who are living with HIV. We want investments to flow that are commensurate with that ambition. We want to see a holding together of the priority of those who carry the burden of this epidemic at the same time as attending to those who are underserved. So to move forward to achieve public health impact and to leave no one behind, those things don't need to be in tension. We need to bring them forward together. There are some very important issues around Medicare ineligibility, delays with access to the regulatory approval of testing and treatment through the TGA, the enabling environment that we heard so powerfully about this morning, including through the talk that Edwin Bernard gave, is very, very important as the context in which the strategy is delivered. And we wanted to see the national peaks actually recognised for the standing that they bring to represent communities. And this is something that had been lost from the national strategies for a long time. So organisations such as NAPWA are recognised by people with HIV as the national organisation which represents them and takes their voice to government. And that had been dropped from national strategies from about the fifth national strategy. And so for us as National Peaks, we wanted to see that reinstated. It's not enough for governments to simply say, we'll work with community. It was important that communities actually be named for the organisations that have standing to represent them. So a little bit about what happened. We have five strategies. That was not always a given. Certainly there was a discussion about whether or not we should have a single BBV and STI strategy. From a community perspective, it was important that we continue to understand the unique characteristics of each of these areas while simultaneously also looking for the opportunities for deepening integration across them. But we didn't think that the timing was right to bring these things together, and we thought there were great risks in doing so. And so we end up with five strategies. We certainly had a very thorough process, a very deep process, and it wasn't linear. Policy processes, strategy development processes are never straightforward, they never go in a straight line. But we did have a very deep process. Very importantly, I really do want to acknowledge just how responsive not only the Commonwealth, but also state and territories were to the community input that was provided and to the input of other stakeholders, including ASHM. And we got COAG Health Council endorsement. And I say that because we shouldn't take that as a given. There is no obligation for ministers to sign off on these kinds of documents. Some ministers would prefer not to sign off on these kinds of documents. So each time we have a strategy which is endorsed, not only by the Commonwealth Minister, but by each state and territory minister, it's an achievement. It's a reaffirmation of the continuing importance of this as a public health priority. And that's what we achieved. Some learnings. You can never start too early. We have a strategy that runs to 2022. It is always a good 12-month process to develop a new strategy. It's never a good idea for there to be a long gap between strategies. And so starting early is very, very important. From a community perspective, we'd like to see a very strong alignment between this as a policy process and the political cycle and the budget cycle, bringing together not only the development of the direction, but also the alignment with that to make sure it can be endorsed in the right kinds of timeframes depending on the federal political cycle, but also it integrates with the federal budget cycle, because from a community perspective, it is very important that investment follow ambition. And Rebecca's quite right. The investments made by the federal government in the budget are really important and they're not to be taken as a given. Intergovernmental dialogue and negotiated agreements. So this is a process of negotiation across governments. Fundamentally, the development of a strategy is not something that happens in Canberra, it's something that happens between Canberra and each of the state and territory governments with partners in the community. But from a community perspective, I'd argue that there are actually opportunities to deepen the intensity of that dialogue. There are no commitments that the Commonwealth seeks that are binding on states and territories for what they might offer in the response to HIV. And yet the Commonwealth bears many of the costs of the epidemic. It bears the costs of the MBS, it bears the costs of the PBS. It's put on astonishing new drugs onto the PBS for hepatitis C treatment. It's listed PrEP. It's registered self-testing. So these are all things that the Commonwealth is offering that actually assist all of us to move forward in the epidemic. And there are opportunities for the Commonwealth to seek greater lock-in and buy-in and to extract commitments from states and territories for the commitment that the Commonwealth offers. And certainly from a community perspective, that's something we'd very welcome. Targets and indicators. Rebecca spoke to these. They are exceedingly hard work to get right. It's not enough just to say we want to measure something. We've got to measure the right thing and we've got to make sure that that doesn't have distorting effects. It's slow and time-consuming and it needs to be started early. But what's even harder than that are finding the solutions to the problems that we know are going to stay with us strategy by strategy. Stigma is an amazing case in point. It's something that we all understand is right at the heart of the challenge we must all grapple with. But the pathways for doing so, the solutions for tackling stigma, aren't necessarily self-evident. And so solution finding is deep work and hard work, and certainly one of the lessons we would see is to think very early and as a discipline for all of us from a community perspective, from the perspective of other partners, to be doing that work early and thinking about what are we going to take to the table when this process actually opens up so that we can be offering the solutions that might be able to find their way into the strategy. And finally, the need to invest early. This was a very, very powerful and effective process, and I'll talk a little bit about what the strategies actually say and what our views are of that. We got the strategies, they've been launched, the Minister announced them at World AIDS Day, that's a wonderful thing. We can now get on with the task of implementation. There have been some delays in the implementation, the flow of new investments that are flowing from the strategies. We know that's a source of frustration, certainly for ourselves, in terms of we want to get on and do the job And we're doing that job as best we can, but we're doing it within existing resources when we know there's so much more to do. So that's a challenge, and certainly part of our learning and our hope for future strategies is that we can get those things properly and fully lined up to get on with the job of implementation, of new and intensified implementation as soon as possible. So a few thoughts on how this strategy measures up. So we've seen 8 of these now, and some are better than others. So where does this one score? What do we actually think about it? It's a very, very substantial policy statement. So policy takes many forms. It was quite possible that we'd end up with a fridge magnet-sized national strategy, you know, one pager, a two pager, something very, very high level, doesn't say much, quick to write, easy to print. But this is a substantial document, and from a community perspective, that's important because this is a complex problem that we're trying to address. So this is an important and substantial policy statement, the 8th of its kind, and certainly, for my part, I think this is the best that we have seen for a number of strategies. The principles are right up front. They're not an appendix. The underpinning foundations of this response are articulated very, very early and very, very powerfully. That's important. We're not disguising those. We're not talking about a technical response. We're talking about something that's founded in very, very deep principles of community participation, of harm reduction, very fundamental fundamental issues for us. Clear goals, including virtual elimination. This wasn't a given. So we had virtual elimination as a target in the 7th strategy. Governments sometimes get nervous about that sort of thing, right? We had a time target for that wasn't achieved. It's quite possible in that sort of situation for governments to say, it's too hard for us to commit to an ambition which says we're going to do this and we're going to do it by a particular date. We wanted the date because that galvanises all of us. It puts the metal into our efforts. We're not shy of having that target, and that target is in the 8th strategy. We also have very, very powerful measurable targets, and I would argue probably world-leading targets. We talked this morning about 90-90-90. The national strategy is 95-95-95. It describes the reduced incidence targets across different priority populations. It affirms the need to sustain virtual elimination for those among whom it is already achieved. PrEP coverage to 75%, absolutely where we need to go to if we're going to achieve virtual elimination. Targets for quality of life and for the reduction of stigma, absolutely world-leading, that a national government and state and territory governments should say, this is core business. Quality of life matters in terms of achieving these public health objectives. The inclusion of trans and gender diverse people as a priority population for the first time, a very welcome recognition. And additionally, the central recognition of Indigenous people within this strategy, but then complemented by a standalone strategy that brings together this strategy plus in the context of other BBVs and SDIs for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. This strategy arguably better holds together a need to recognise the full diversity of the epidemic that has always been part of this epidemic and that is particularly visible today while attending to the burden. That is to hold together the need to achieve public health gain while we leave no one behind. It recognises the standing of community peaks, naming the peaks as having the authority to represent communities, provides much stronger, much more direct language on priorities, including very strong statements on Yuggu. Again, not something to be taken as a given. Very powerful statements on criminalisation. Not simply to acknowledge that criminalisation exists, but to say that criminalisation is a fundamental barrier to achieving the goals of this strategy. It is problematic and it harms people. Those are very, very powerful things to see in a national policy statement. It rejects mandatory testing of sex workers. And while it only rejects mandatory testing in the context of sex work, when we look at the discussion about mandatory testing that's flowing around the country, we can take that sentiment and think about how that applies to the broader application of spitting laws and their introduction. It makes a commitment to really look seriously at the issue of Medicare ineligibility. And we understand just how important that is, and it's a big deal for the Commonwealth and for the states and territories to say, we recognise there is an issue here and we're going to sit down together to try and work through it. It names sterile injecting equipment and the absence of that as a barrier to achieving to preventing HIV in custodial settings. It provides very, very strong and powerful recognition of the important role of peer education and peer-led action. And there were no awkward, Graham's laughing, he remembers, there are no awkward late additions. We have had, I don't know if it was, was it the sixth strategy? Graham's having a flashback, but there are occasionally moments where at the final stages of the development of a national strategy, some additional words, some additional ideas will creep in, maybe very, very close to the top of the food chain when it's being signed off, that can be quite harmful. And we didn't see that. There was no ministerial, there was no political interference, either at the Commonwealth level or at the state and territory level, that leaves us very, very concerned that we have these strange ideas creeping into the national strategy. And that's important because it means that this was a strategy that was developed well and accepted as an important statement of policy priority. I won't talk about the process of getting it done other than to say this is the stuff that matters. So we have something very, very powerful and foundational, but actually it's the doing it that actually matters. The things that I'd like to say perhaps in conclusion, though, picking up on a comment that Julia Gillard made when she was reflecting on gender and misogyny and her experience as Prime Minister, the strategy is very, very important to the work we do as a national response. It's not everything in the national response, but equally, I think we'd be very... I think we'd feel the effect if it wasn't there to provide that overarching framework and that underpinning. The chassis, not the engine, right? This is a very, very good document that sets very, very powerful directions, but it doesn't, it's not a car built with a big bag of money in the centre of it. That'd be the ideal model. So the strategy is the aspiration, and then investment flows independently of that, but the strategy certainly informs that. It is a very important framework. Really importantly, it guards against drift. If you think about the kind of environment we might find ourselves in if we went 5 years without a strategy, would we expect that all states and territories are aligned? Would we expect that we have a clear understanding of the Commonwealth's expectations and its tolerance for particular kinds of policy in relation to HIV? And most importantly, the job of completing the strategy, the job of launching the strategy, allows us to get on with the business of actually delivering the strategy. Thank you very much.